Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
So actually, as a kid, I wanted to be a pro hockey player and a cartoonist in the offseason. And so the art part, you know, has obviously come back in this Cosmic Journal. And even in, like, Evolved Enterprise, my other book, I didn't feel like it was fully complete. And then literally at like 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, oh, I should illustrate a few things in here. So I added a few doodles, and then it's got like this surge of energy around it. And so, like, going back to the stuff that you loved as a kid, for doesn't even matter why, but seeing how do we incorporate it in certain ways. And it may be incorporating your business, or it might not be. It might just be like almost like scheduling play dates for yourself. Play is recreation for a reason, or recreation essentially. And it's just so powerful. Like, you can just tell when somebody's lost that little boy or girl inside of them. There's a guy named Stuart Brown, who's a PhD, who wrote a book called Literally Play. And his quote in here was, "The opposite of play is not work. The opposite of play is depression."
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like, what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Yannick, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Sreedi, I'm super excited that we could find time in between your snowboarding.
You have fallen victim to my notorious rescheduling for the one thing that I will consistently reschedule for, which is either surf conditions or a day on the mountain. But you also caught me in a move to you know.
Yeah. But as I said before, I totally understand and I actually appreciate it.
Well, I never lie. I usually just tell people, hey, I need to get a day on the mountain or I'm going to lose my mind. And trust me, we'll have a better conversation.
Yeah,
if we
for sure. And it's like, it's just, it's a really good reminder that, you know, to make sure that you're taking care of yourself.
Yeah. So I want to start differently than we did last time, because I think I believe, if I remember correctly, last time I asked you about what your parents did for work. But this time, you know, I want to start by asking you, what is one of the most important things that you learned from one or both of your parents that have influenced and shaped who you've become and what you've done with your life and sort of, you know, your character and the way that you've run your business and, you know, the work that you've done?
Great question. I've learned a lot from both of them, and they're kind of two different people. So my family's Russian immigrants. We came over when I was 3 years old from Russia, from Moscow. And my dad pretty much got started right away with the medical equipment sales and service company because he was about to get fired from his work at a hospital. And he had a choice to either get fired or leave, and he left. And so I learned from my dad for sure this idea of starting with nothing and building up something, that immigrant success mentality and how to just, you know, again, start from nothing, build up something. My mom, she really, you know, gave me the gift of like just joy and happiness and also following your own heart. Like she had suffered from breast cancer and ovarian cancer and then breast cancer again for quite a long time. And then there's like three or four times the doctor's like, get your things together. And she beat it each time. But anytime she was feeling good, she was just happy and making sure that she was living life to the fullest. And I remember, you know, one incident was really stands out for me was she was going to get remarried. My parents divorced when I was 13 and she was getting remarried a long time after. And so I'm like, well, I'll pay for your wedding and honeymoon, but we're going to Vegas and you're gonna get married by Elvis. Like, yeah, done. So, you know, we have these great photos of her getting married off by Elvis and just, you know, she like, it didn't even like give, yeah, not even a second thought. She's like, yeah, of course.
Mm, wow. So, you know, I mean, your mother, that sounds so different than sort of the standard immigrant narrative of we're here to bust our asses. It sounds like you have two very sort of different narratives from each parent, each of which have influenced you to so that you turn out much more balanced than somebody who basically just, you know, works their fingers to the bone. So a couple of things come from that. I wonder, out of that immigrant narrative, you having had children, how much of that has been passed on and how much of that work ethic have you instilled in them? And what parts have you found that you get resistance from them from, you know, when you try to instill some of this?
Man, the kid part is interesting. My kids now are 14 and 12. And the one thing that I think that we did really well with them, there's a lot of things, but one thing that's been consistent is like a couple of years ago, we created something we call the 13 Silver Keys. And these are like kind of like core values. And so most of the time on Sunday nights, we'll have a dinner and then the kids will share something that happened during the week that were parts of this, you know, that are examples of these 13 silver keys. And so it's everything from like sing, dance, and laugh to go the extra mile to explore, dare to dream big, to all the way at the end, which is make magic, like being open and looking for the magic in the world. And these things that show up in these amazing ways. So the, you know, what I've always thought about is that I want to leave just like trail markers, right? Like I don't want them to follow. I don't need them to follow exactly what I've done. I don't need them to, I don't want to push them in a direction. I just want to give them like just some mile marker points or just, you know, a little bit of a GPS that they can follow. And I want them to follow what gives them their true happiness, that they feel really utilized and like they're contributing in their unique way. And I'm more about like them seeing what I do and less about me telling them. So I like it when they see me doing yoga or meditating. I like it when they, I don't know, see me going off and doing wild adventures and they know I'm signed up to go into space and so forth. So like, you know, for me, it's much more about truly living my life and then that being the example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one thing I always wonder with people who have parents who are immigrants and then, you know, grow up in this country, I don't know if your wife is of Russian descent or not, but...
Way, way, way back. So, you know, I'd say American.
Yeah. So the thing that I always wonder is when you have immigrant parents, you come to this country, you have this aspect of culture, how do you choose what you're going to preserve and retain and maintain heritage over time? Because, you know, and I've talked about this on the show before, but I've always been intrigued by it for some reason, because I think that the first thing to go usually is language, and then bit by bit, other things start to go. So yeah. I wonder, you know, how have you chosen to preserve aspects of your own culture with your kids? Yeah.
You know, I don't think I've done a great job with this, actually, because my parents would talk to me in Russian. I'd respond back in English.
I can relate.
And
Russian, but like, yeah, our language.
Yeah. Like, you didn't want to be the weirdo immigrant child. And I, you know, I was for sure the weirdo immigrant child. You know, I joke around with my friends and my cousin who's known me, you know, for forever. She's 7 years younger, and now she works with me. I'm like, I didn't have sneakers until I was 14. She's like, whatever, you're lying. I'm like, no, really. And I like pulled up a picture and it's like these brown leather or something, you know, shoes. And then I had sandals and just like at some point you like, you want to fit in. Right. So that was a big part. And then you're like, you know, that was actually really special that, you know, that you had this other background and then you start coming back to it in some ways. So I don't think I've done a great job of like instilling, you know, anything. So our heritage is Russian Jews. So instilling the Judaism part, like I also don't like relate anymore to any of that. Like I'm much more universal, spiritual than anything else. I'm interested in where all religions or where all spiritual traditions intersect and so forth. So I'm just like more about like letting them figure it out on their own. And I don't know. It's tough because there's no real like Russian celebration that we as a family continue doing. And there's no like, you know, we'll do like Hanukkah or something like that. But, but there's no real tradition that continues.
Wow. So, I want to revisit part of the conversation that you and I had last time. And I still to this day remember this, and I've written about it in articles. I've quoted it. We were talking about money and success. And I remember you telling me the story of how you sold your Aston Martin and you had this client who had told you that he wanted to be a billionaire. And when you had him really dissect the essence of his goal, it turned out that he didn't need $1 billion. And I remember even going through this exercise myself, you know, thinking the same thing. And I thought, okay, the only thing I could use $1 billion for is to buy a professional sports team, which is a weird sort of interest of mine. I don't even like watch sports, but I play sports video games religiously. And I just think it would be awesome to own a sports team. So that's the only thing I could use $1 billion for. But that really struck me in particular, because on any given day when you, you know, scroll through your Facebook newsfeed, you go to websites like Medium, people hear your guests like you on podcasts like ours, there's this constant narrative of, oh, this is the standard for success. These are the people that we look up to. These are the people we should be modeling ourselves after. And yet that almost kind of, you know, that you have these two messages that are in conflict with each other. One, which is about the essence of your goals. And yet you're constantly being bombarded by external influences that potentially alter what you think are the essence of your goals or is the essence. So I wonder how you navigate that dynamic.
I think you have to really like, I love continuing to question what is, you know, what's sort of the essence of it, right? Like getting down to bedrock. And one of the easiest ways of doing it is if you find yourself being like, oh yeah, I wish I had whatever, you know, make up a number, make up a thing that you want. I want, you know, this particular, you know, beach house, or I want this jet, or I want, you know, whatever it is, I want $1 million in the bank. I want 10. I want, you know, like you said, a billion, whatever it is. And then if the easiest way is to just ask why and write, you know, I'm a big journaler. We'll talk about journaling, I'm sure. Yeah. Like, so writing even just why, right? And then writing why again, and then writing why again, and why again, and why again. So even just like five times will get you down to what is the true bedrock of it. And it gets away from like, what's the ego aspect of it, and what's the true essence of it. And usually it's around either freedom or love, or just something that's a much more, just deeper essence that you can get to. Mm-hmm. And then I'll give you a really cool, magic way of doing this even more. So you could do it with your dominant hand. You could also do maybe your first couple answers with your dominant hand, and then your last two with your non-dominant hand. So use your, you know, I'm right-handed, so I would use my left hand and come up with something. And it's so powerful. It's so deep.
Mm. So what I wonder about somebody like you, I mean, like I said, you know, we talked about the fact that you had sold an Aston Martin, you know, last time we were here. So, I mean, you had pretty much everything that most of us think equals success by material standards. This whole idea of understanding the essence of your goals, is that a conclusion that you came to after you achieved material success? Because I think that in my mind, the sort of cynical person would say, yeah, that's easy for Yannick to say, he has money and he's well off.
Yeah, it's. I wrote a blog post way back about like, does something about, I can't remember the title, but it was something. But the essence of it was like, does wanting a Rolex make you successful? And it was just like, you know, originally way back, I wanted a Rolex to like kind of prove I was successful, and then I got it, and I was like, meh. And then you know, it was the fancier car, and it kept upgrading fancier cars, and then it was. And like I had this whole progression of goal setting, you know, originally it's just like writing down your goal, very specific thing. And then I added, or more or better or faster or sooner, whatever it is. And then it was, okay, you know, what's it really about? And the 10 million in the bank is really about the freedom of working with who you want, doing the things that you want, when you want, yeah. And you don't need the 10 million in the bank. Like for that, it's like you get to the real essence of it. So I haven't come to a conclusion if you actually need the material wants first that then drive you to do it, or if you can just be wise enough and smart enough and be like, well, maybe I don't need that.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something in you that you have to like prove it to yourself or prove it to your parents or something like that. But if you can get away from that, like, and really look at why are you doing it again, then mm-hmm. then maybe you can shortcut that process.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's the sort of hedonic treadmill, right? Of the goalpost just keeps moving. And even Ryan Holiday, when we were here recently, you know, it was crazy to, you know, this was his eighth book, which I think was number one on the New York Times bestseller list after eight tries, and now three books in the same year. But one of the things that he said that was so interesting was he said, you know, that there's always this next level that we think we have to get to. And he said, and the thing is, he said that drives a lot of accomplishment, that belief, because he said, if we didn't have that, then nobody who was senator would have the ambition to become president. So he said, it's good on the aggregate, but on the individual level, it's a complete lie. It doesn't lead to the satisfaction that you think it will. And yet I think that anybody listening to this can understand that intellectually, but until they're in that position of being there, I don't think they get sort of an emotional understanding of it. Because, I mean, even when I came to your events, one of my first thoughts was, what the hell am I doing here? Everybody here is like a millionaire and I'm, you know, a guy writing books and like putzing along. This is, right. I feel like a total imposter in this environment. Because, I mean, the people in your circle are impressive, to say the least. Every one of them has built like huge companies or taken companies public or been, you know, at the forefront of, you know, massive public companies. So, with that, you know, dynamic, how do you, I guess, really learn from people like this without falling into this imposter syndrome trap? And do you ever feel that when you're surrounded by these people?
Yeah, I do, actually, because, you know, you get in that spot, especially when you start comparing. And that's such a, and this is one of the things I keep, you know, like my daughter would, you could wake her up at 3 a.m. and she'd be like, "No, don't compare, you know, you compare, she makes you unhappy or whatever." And, you know, she'll like roll her eyes when she tells you that, but it, you know, she's heard it enough that maybe it sinks in. And it's definitely difficult if you allow yourself to get on that same path, which is especially if looking at social media or looking at anyone else's stuff going on, or you start comparing yourself to them. And what I found is, it's really funny. Like you don't realize that they're also thinking the same, because you most likely have done something that they're like, oh, I wish I could do that, or whatever the case is. But, and at the real core of it though, is like how comfortable we are with ourselves, and how well we know ourselves, how well we truly, I mean, this is going to sound soft and fluffy, but how well we love ourselves. Yeah. And I think this is a mutual friend of ours, Kamal Ravikant, uh-huh. who wrote an amazing book, Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It. And it just got released again. And, you know, that was when I was going through a pretty dark time of like just my identity being so wrapped up into my business, and things were going sideways because I had kind of followed this cosmic alarm clock, as I call it, of like getting away from the digital marketing, internet marketing space, and just following what this whole maverick path was. There's definitely a dark period of like, wow, my friends are like killing it and crushing it, and I'm just, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like sideways, just, you know, it would be so easy at that point to go back to the sort of the golden handcuffs. But I kept being driven by this fact that there was something more and a bigger reason why. Hmm. And I think if you have a bigger reason why for what you're doing, you're able to then not be so influenced by what seems like is the typical narrative that society is thrusting on us.
Yeah. It's funny to hear you talk about sort of moving away from that sort of digital marketing, you know, aspect of things. I think when we rebranded as Unmistakable Creative, that was like a very, very clear decision to do exactly that. But I knew also the cost of doing that was going to be that it would slow down our growth. We would be taking a step back and, you know, two steps back to take 20 forward in the future. And yeah. I saw it firsthand that people who started after we did became bigger. They had bigger audiences with their podcasts. And yet, you know, I also started to see those very same people almost 2 or 3 years later start to bow out. And I mean, these are mutual friends of ours who basically have put their podcast on a temporary hiatus, which to me basically means they're not coming back. And I realized, I was like, wow, okay, had I not been committed to this sort of purpose that I have to make the world more creative, then I think, it would have been easy to basically sell out, so to speak, and do something.
Yeah, or get lost doing the stuff that you thought you should be following or that is the next trend or the next whatever. But yeah, having that bedrock of the, you know, that mission and that North Star is so, so powerful. And it takes exploration. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really takes you doing the hard work of, as creatives, like I think, you know, as entrepreneurs, I think we're all artists as well. Yeah. So I think there's a real nice, overlap between this idea of unmistakable creatives and artists and entrepreneurs, because like, I feel like you can truly put your heart and soul into something and it's a piece of art. And, but you also have to look at some of the darker sides of yourself, mm-hmm. which is your shadow aspects.
Yeah.
And not enough people really look at that part because it's messy and it's painful and it requires you to do some digging. And so like, I was actually just having a conversation with, I can't remember who it was yesterday at a small little marketing mastermind I was at, but we were talking about the shadow side, and they were asking me about, you know, what had I explored on my shadow side? And I immediately brought up about this part of an artist. And then having an archetype, which is being self-sabotaging as an artist. And I'm like, okay, well, every single part of us actually empowers us. And there's a reason for it if we can make friends with that part of us. And so how does that help me? And then it forced me to look at everything that didn't feel like art to me, I would kind of self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. Like I wouldn't want it to get out and get bigger because it didn't feel like the fullest expression of who I was. Mm. And so that's why I shut down a lot of these other things. That's why, you know, it's like, as you move up higher and higher in this mountain, I guess you're whittling away what isn't truly you. You're whittling away what's really, really good to get to what's really great.
Mm. Wow. So I think this actually makes a perfect segue into talking about the new book. But before we do that, I want to ask you one other thing, which I think is actually a perfect setup to talk about the material in the book itself. You're this interesting blend of sort of emotional and logical, spiritual and practical. because of the fact that, you know, you have all this stuff that I've often written off as new age bullshit, and yet you incorporate it into your life in a way that makes you successful. So I wonder how people integrate those two things at the same time, because I think that our tendencies are to go in one extreme or the other. I know that for me, the tendency is absolutely to go in the extreme of logic. I'm like, if you can't back up with real science, it's nonsense, to a fault. You know, like, I'm skeptical almost to a fault of things that I can't explain or understand with research. And yeah. So, I wonder how you've integrated both those aspects of yourself and how other people do as well.
I think it's being open to it is one thing. Like, I'm drinking from a mug, and it has like one of my favorite quotes on there from attributed to Einstein, which says there are only two ways to live your life. One as though nothing is a miracle, and the other as though everything is. And I think it comes with our just being willing to just be open. You know, you don't have to be so open that you accept absolutely everything that's thrown at you. But I think that we have a really good internal barometer of like, okay, that resonates and that feels true. Even if you can't 1000%, you know, show the facts behind it or the science behind it or whatever, you know, you want to make it feel fully, just logical. And I think that's where I'm okay with, like, being open to stuff and not having to say, okay, prove it to me fully. And you'll find this a lot with, I don't know how often you have like synchronicities or these things that show up in your life like that. And to me, they're a perfect example of that, because there's always a way of like writing it off as like, well, you know, it could just be a coincidence. But when you start looking at it, you know, it might not be a coincidence. Like, I don't know, like one that really, really meant a lot for me and was we normally do a summit for Maverick members. It used to be in the first week in December. We've since moved it now to like the second week in January, but it's always like that first week in December. And so during 2012, for this Mayan calendar change, I had been studying a lot about this and I just thought it was really fascinating. I'm like, we need to be there. And my team's like, what? No, we're not going there. It's 4 days before Christmas. And I'm like, no, we need to go down to the Mayan Riviera. And then they were able to find a Mayan village we could actually spend the night at. And we brought everyone in, and we brought everyone into a Temescal. I don't know if you know what that is, which is a sweat lodge, but a Mayan sweat lodge. And so you go in there, and the symbolism is that you're going into the womb of the earth to be reborn. And so we were like late getting there. There's an accident on the road. The shaman was late. And we had two groups that were in there because it was like 60 some people and only fits about 30 people. And this is super, you know, pitch dark. And then it's hard to breathe because they bring in a lava rock that they pour water on. It's like, you know, imagine a sauna, but times five, how hot it is, or times three, and pitch dark, closed, you know, very low ceilings. And previous to that, I got bits of claustrophobia, so I didn't think I was going to stay in there, but I did stay in there. And so we literally come out, you have to yell to move this big boulder that they have blocking the entrance. And we yell, and then we come out, we hear the other group being like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we came out literally at midnight at the, you know, on the winter solstice of this Mayan calendar change. And it was like the first time that I can really recall that I was like, you know, this is exactly where I was meant to be in this time and space. Because previous to that, I'm a 7 on an Enneagram, which is like, you want to experience everything. You want to try everything. You want to, you know, knock it off your checklist and so forth. And it was such a powerful moment for me, and that symbolism being reborn, that it just felt like we were meant to be there. Now, you know, you could be like, well, of course, you know, it just so happened that you came out at midnight, and that could be the case too, but it had such tremendous meaning for me in synchronicity. And that's the other thing, is that we're all meaning making machines. So why not also allow yourself to have a greater meaning aligned with something bigger.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Srini. I hope you're liking this episode of The Unmistakable Creative. Did you know that every Sunday, our community manager, Melina, sends out 10 key takeaways from episodes like this one? All you have to do to receive it is sign up for our newsletter. Just visit unmistakablecreative.com/newsletter and you'll get them delivered right to your inbox. Again, that's unmistakablecreative.com/newsletter. Well, I think that that makes, like I said, a perfect segue into the book to do something that has a greater meaning that's aligned with you. I mean, you and I were talking about the whole audience of one concept and the fact that this really began as something you started doing for an audience of one, which led to a book deal with a publisher. So what prompted this?
Yeah, so this Cosmic Journal. You know what prompted it way back is actually, I just realized this, and it's another synchronicity, which is really interesting, was, have you ever seen Carl Jung's Red Book?
I haven't, actually.
It's a fascinating, it's like super oversized book. It's a book that he released after his death, or his family released. He didn't want to put it out while he was alive because he was worried that the scientific community wouldn't take him seriously anymore, because it was basically a channeled book. It was like this, that he had this entity, Philemon, who was like, you know, feeding him this whole story and this mythical story. And then, so he drew it, illustrated all of it. And I was just like fascinated by this. I've loved Jung just from all the different things he's brought forth. And so I had actually drawn a picture of him in my journal way, way, way back, and had a little cartoon, you know, thought bubble, dialogue bubble. And it said, create your own Red Book. And I'm like, oh, that's funny. And then, like, I saw many years later, I saw this challenge going around, which was a 100-day art challenge. And so in my journal, I even wrote, like, thinking about it, I'm like, you know, God, do I want to do this? Like, I travel around a lot. Do I really want to commit to this? Like, what would it be? And then what would I be excited to put out a piece of art every single day for? And so I decided on, like, creating a journal page every single day that was illustrated. And then just my thoughts on just, I call it this galactic instruction manual you're missing when you're born to re-remember your destiny here. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I was, you know, the audience of one is for myself. It was like my own little galactic instruction manual of fulfilling my destiny here. And so every single day, So instead of 100 days, I made it 108 days because in the wisdom and yogic traditions, much more meaningful number. And very first thing I did was have my black moleskin and I put, 108 blank checkboxes and just committed to doing it every single night. So some nights it would be taking something from my, from years and years of journals and then going back and redoing them and putting them in this thing. And other times it'd literally just be meditating and seeing what was wanted to come through me. Mm. And it was like deep. Have you ever like felt like, I have this term that I love. It's called effortless effort, Like putting your full self into something. And, but it feels like so joyful, like you're feeling fully utilized. Mm. And that's how I felt every single day when I checked off that checkbox. And some nights, it's 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning that I'm writing this. I could be at one of our events. Whatever it is, I'm like, no, I'm committed to doing this. And that checkbox is so powerful. And as a byproduct, anytime you make these kind of commitments to yourself and you follow through, your self-confidence, I think the way that you make agreements with yourself gets stronger and stronger. And so that was another byproduct. But then I started using it like an oracle, like maybe about 50, 60, 70 days into it. I would just pop it open and it would have like this incredible message for me and all this magic would show up. And so a funny, like just synchronicity that I just realized was, so when I wrote that little thing about Jung and I actually illustrated a picture from the book, it was print number 111. And this cosmic journal, it's like the wildest thing I've ever edited or put together. And so when I had, when I finished it up, I had an artist scan in all the pages. And they're little like 2-inch by 2-inch little contact sheets that I cut up. And so imagine this, Renee. I had literally all these pages, 2-inch by 2-inch on my kitchen island and trying to figure out what the hell the order was. And so like moving them around and then I put like a little note on there for my kids in the morning. I'm like, don't touch this, don't blow, don't like do anything like I was up late working on, and then the night that I finished it was at exactly 1:11 a.m. And then that, the piece from the Carl Jung book was print number 111. And then I also created these left-hand prompt pages because, again, they're just created for me. But when I made it into a real project, I finished those left-hand prompt pages at 1:11 a.m. And it wasn't like I had this alarm that goes off. I'm like, okay, I'm done. So just really lots of unique magical things that happen from it.
So I think just when I looked at this, I noticed that you had so many sort of different life lessons. You talk about the benefits of journaling. One of the questions I had about the creative aspect of this is, do you actually know how to draw? Did you draw all this stuff yourself during the process? Because my handwriting is so atrocious that I could never pull something like this off.
Yeah, I hand drew every single one of these things. Every single page is hand drawn by me, and written by me, which also made the editing process unbelievably interesting because when it did turn into a real thing, my editor is like, okay, you need to get rid of this paragraph or this thing. And then we'd be like, I'd rewrite the entire page or a section and then we cut and paste and add new, I have to have new drawings certain times. It was fascinating.
Mm. So I want to start with the thing that stood out to me the most in terms of all of this. And one of the things you mentioned is, why blend in if you are made to stand out? I mean, given that I've built an entire brand around that message, to me, that was naturally the one that stood out to immediately.
Yeah.
So what do you think it is about us that makes us want to fit in when we were made to stand out? And I'll give you one other example. So yesterday I wrote a blog post. This has like been an ongoing thought in my head that I've just been kind of riffing on, and as a joke I wrote a Facebook post titled "Fix Your Fucked Up Life, Have More Sex and Make More Money," which I think is the premise of every self-help book ever written. And I wrote it as a joke, and then I did a follow-up on it about coaches and self-help books and how basically it just is this vicious circle of buy my book, come to my seminar, then hire me to be your coach to fix the problem that you never had to begin with. And I got some flack for it. And I noticed this morning, I was thinking to myself, wow, these are friends of mine, people who've been guests on the podcast, and I kind of pissed them off. And part of me was like really close to saying, oh, maybe I should go delete the post.
Right. But that's how you truly felt. It's like, I mean, it's just so much easier to kind of blend in and not proclaim what makes us so remarkable, what makes us so unique, what makes us, because it's safer or it feels safer. But at the same time, I feel like our soul dies a little bit each moment that we don't do that. You talk about the imposter syndrome being in that room or feeling it, but the true imposter syndrome to me is living your life that you're just kind of mailing it in, you're phoning it in. And so this is page 35 that you're talking about. It says, why blend in if you're made to stand out? And it says, somehow we think we're being humble if we don't proclaim our greatness to fully stand up and be in our unique contribution, the thing you do better than just about anyone else. And usually it's a combination of several talents and interests from your background. Nobody likes the overconfident boaster, but more times than not, we underestimate how valuable what we do really is. Sometimes it's because it comes so easy to us, but genius is the combination of multiple areas that are perfectly natural for us and only you. Stand fully in that perfect space, deliver your greatest gift to the world. Mm. We're waiting. And, you know, again, this is like partly written for me. And now that I think about it, now that it's out, like it was really written for my kids, for my grandkids. It's like, it's just, you know, things that were going through my head or lessons that I wanted to pull out from over the years, but then some were like just completely new things that were just downloads from the universe that I got. Mm. And this idea of not wanting to stand out is, it's like this combination of like, well, it seems so easy, you know, what I do so well that no one else, you know, would value it. Yeah. And that's what we have to get rid of. But then also it's like this combination, like where I think the real creativity is combining multiple things together and coming up with your own new, almost like new genre in a way. And the guy who created Dilbert Scott Adams, I think talks about like, where are like three items that you can do that are, you can do really well, yeah, and you combine them together. And then that becomes the unique thing that you do. And all of it is like, we look back and there's like these little, you know, these little dots, these little connection points, these little things that, that we loved, and then you start combining it all, and that's where the magic is.
Yeah. I think one of the other ones, naturally, of course, being somebody who's an author and who lives and dies by books, was the idea of book stack your positive future. And I know that you and I have had multiple Instagram conversations about our libraries, because I think we're both very much just sort of book addicts. Like I go through two books a week. You even write about sort of some of your earliest books that have influenced you. What are some not so conventional books, maybe ones that we haven't heard mentioned 1,000 times that have played a role in your life?
Yeah. I mean, to me, books are like, they're some of my best friends. Like I love books because, you know, somebody put 10, 20, 30, 40 years of their life into it. The ones anyway, who are, you know, who truly put their heart and soul into the books. And it's just such a powerful, powerful thing. And then I think there's magic in books too, like the right kind of books. So I'm a big fan of like oracles, and then like, you know, obviously, as you know, like the magic and the synchronicity and the things like that. So I'll flip to different books and be like, oh, here's the message I need for today or whatever it is. And I love that part. But some ones that I think are maybe underrated or really weird and cool. There's one called A Brief Tour of Higher Consciousness by a guy named Itzhak Bentov. He was like, he helped invent like missiles in the Israeli army, and he's invented a bunch of different things, like a bunch of like some cardiac, maybe stents or something like that. So, you know, not a dumb guy, but he was a hardcore meditator. And then this was like what came out of his meditations. And so it's a really, really cool, it's a really interesting book, and not super well known. And then I don't know. I love weird books for sure. Let's see what else would be interesting. Go with something really, really odd. Astrotheology and Shamanism. Mm. It was probably not too many people have read that. It's all about like the psilocybin mushroom and how that actually has influenced mystical thought and religion. And so I'm a fan of almost anything. I like, I'm really intrigued by different things, and then making those connection points and seeing where they fit in. Mm.
So there's one other one that caught my attention, and I noticed that it was from your daughter. And so I wanted to have you talk about it, the Rainbow Rules.
Yeah. It's such a fun one. Let's see what page that is. You have a page number up?
I don't, I just noticed it because
You noticed?
Yeah, I saw that. That caught my attention while I was, you know, like I said, this is one of the rare occasions which I don't have the physical version of your book in front of me because
I got it.
Packing.
Page 83. So this is, so my daughter Zoe now is 12. I have a boy and a girl, and she's like, she's definitely the philosopher. I mean, when she was like three, she's like, so daddy, who are God's parents? I'm like, that's a great, good question. So she wrote these seven rainbow rules, and it's like, everyone has one same power, following your dreams. Everyone can be what they want. Everyone is true. Don't give up. Be cool. Do what you want and show it. Be special and good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's so good. And so I wrote, you know, I wrote by Zoe Silver, age 8 and a half, but I think it was like, even when she's like seven or so, you know, I think a bit younger. And so I redrew these in her handwriting, and she's actually part of the book in different times. So I let her draw one or two little things in here. I let her, you know, obviously this whole page is her page. And just this idea that like kids are kind of like the best truth tellers. Like I found her stuff in this old butterfly journal that I was cleaning out in the basement. And that's where these rainbow rules are. And then like, I think our teachers are like, or sorry, our children are our teachers. In like, if we let them and they are, you know, they truly are like, there's something super wise about them. Let them kind of share with you their magic and allow them to do that.
Wow. So I think the thing that struck me most about those rainbow rules, as you were just even describing your daughter, is the sense of optimism that a kid has and sort of the sense of cynicism that we start to develop as adults simply because of life experience, right? We basically, any one of us could take everything that is in one of the rainbow rules and say, yeah, I have a counter example based on life experience. Yeah. And I don't think that happens, you know, necessarily because we're intentionally cynical, but life experience does harden us a little bit. So I wonder, you know, how do you maintain that sort of semblance of childlike optimism as an adult?
I think it's so important to like keep that inner child, like that piece of you alive. And so for me, it's usually like going back to what did I love to do from the ages of like maybe 8 to 13 or even 6 to 13 and seeing what was that, right? Like, so as a kid, I wanted to be a pro hockey player and a cartoonist in the off season. And so the art part, you know, has obviously come back in this Cosmic Journal and even in like Evolved Enterprise, my other book, I didn't feel like it was fully complete. And then literally at like 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, oh, I should illustrate a few things in here. And then, so I added a few doodles and then it's got like this surge of energy around it. And so like going back to the stuff that you loved as a kid for, doesn't even matter why, but seeing how do we incorporate it in certain ways. And it may be incorporating your business or it might not be, it might just be like almost like scheduling play dates for yourself. And, there's a page in here about play is called, you know, play is recreation for a reason, or recreation essentially. And it's just so powerful. Like you can just tell when somebody's lost that little boy or girl inside of them. It's page 101. And there's a great quote in here. There's a guy named Stuart Brown, who's I think a PhD, who wrote a book called Literally Play. Mm-hmm. And his quote in here was, the opposite of play is not work. The opposite of play is depression.
Wow.
And it's such a powerful concept that we can add like play, like what truly gives you joy, and how do you make sure that it's part of your life? It just is gonna, like, so when I did this this challenge for myself, like every single day, like I can notice my creativity increase in other aspects of my business, of my work. I just felt more joyful. And so adding that part is so powerful. And I've been really lucky, like the mentors that I have, they play. Right. There's a guy named Frank McKinney who builds these very high end mansions in Florida, South Florida, on the beach, on spec. You know, it's a $20 million mansion is his last one. He's about to retire. And then we would go to Haiti for several years together. And when we went to the orphanages, like he just like taught me even a whole new level of play. I can play for sure, but he is just even more so, and just to see it. where he would climb up on top of this bus and he would take a basketball and throw it as high as he could and have all the kids try and catch it and it like land on some of their heads. And, you know, they'd all be laughing. He'd be laughing. And, you know, he'd have these races with them where they would run and he would run with them. And it's just like, just, you know, that is such a gift to not lose, because you can become super cynical and become an adult and feel like, oh, this is the way I'm supposed to be. And you don't have to be.
Wow. So I have two final questions for you. I think, you know, getting back sort of to the essence of goals, at this point in your life, I think you've accomplished many of the things that most of us probably would consider bucket list items, you know, the fancy cars, the, you know, successful business, you know, sort of all the check boxes of society's life plan, so to speak.
Right.
How do you define success now, and how has it changed with age?
You know, to me, it's all about intentionality. It's about like every single year I'll go off into the woods a little bit on winter solstice and then just set my intention for the year. And then also as we're in this new decade, it's really become a new, just a mile marker of, okay, what is like 2020 to me feels like a really powerful moment, because 2020 equals perfect vision. So really making sure that I'm doing what I'm meant to be doing. And the question that I've continued to sort of grapple with and explore is, and anyone that's successful, no matter what level, like they have a lot of things they could be doing, but what are they truly meant to be doing? Like what's the discernment? What is theirs to do? And so that's been where I've been focused on. And I've really realized that for me, it's my role is to catalyze the catalysts. And that's, you know, if I can be doing that, that's really success for me.
Wow. Well, I have one last question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews at the Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
I think it's when they put their full heart and soul into something, because it's that unique expression of who they truly are. And you know, I think you hit it so well, this idea of an audience of one. It's like what you really want for yourself is going to make you unmistakable.
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and to come back for a second round of subjecting yourself to my insane questions.
It's always fun. It's always enjoyable. And you got good questions that make me think, and I love it.
Where can people find out more about you, your work, and the new book?
You can go to cosmicjournal.com and you can see some illustrations and different things. And actually, there's an Oracle page on there. You can click on it and it'll have a message for the day for you. Of course, any online booksellers got it. And then I blog occasionally at YannickSilver, YannickSilver.com.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we'll wrap the show with that. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch. The skills that are essential for standing out and thriving, no matter how much technology evolved. We're talking about real differentiators here, like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this, AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.